Welcome, everyone. In light of having to postpone our in-person ILS conference in New York this year, which is now on April the 22nd, we thought we'd run some interviews with our kind sponsors of the conference so that we can showcase their leadership and to thank them for their support as well. So tickets are still available for the event. You can visit the Artemis website and sign up and attend the conference in person, and you'll be able to hear from some of the people you see speaking in our videos. But for this virtual ILS NYC 2022 event video, I'm delighted to welcome speakers from one of our associate sponsors for the conference, the global law firm Mayer Brown. So we have with us today Steve Rooney, partner and co-leader of the Mayer Brown Global Insurance Industry Group. We have Ricky Spitzer, who's a partner in that group, and Colin Skaggle, who's a partner in that group as well. Now, Steve and Ricky are both based in New York, so the conference is going to be just around the corner for them, but Colin is based in London. Unfortunately, due to time differences, the third leg of Mayer Brown's ILS team couldn't join us today as TLM is based in Hong Kong. So welcome, guys. Really good to see you again.
Welcome, Steve. Thanks for having us.
So, as ever, we're looking at the development of the ILS market and keeping one eye to the future, as is the way with all of our events. And Steve, Ricky and Colin are all very well-known faces in the insurance and securities market. They work on many high-profile transactions that we cover here at Artemis, so it's always good to get their views as to how the market is progressing. And they've always got some interesting points to give us on how transactions are coming to market at the moment and the important work Mayer Brown is doing in those. So perhaps we could turn to you to start with, Steve. At the upcoming conference, we're going to be talking about resetting the scene after what's been a particularly challenging period for the ILS market, mainly due to high levels of catastrophe loss once again. From your vantage point, how have you seen these challenges playing out, and have you been impressed with the way the ILS market's responded to them?
Yeah, thank you, Steve. It's very interesting. 2021, notwithstanding the global pandemic, notwithstanding the losses you referred to in the market, was a record year for the market. As reported by Artemis, there were nearly $14 billion of new issuance of ILS. That's the largest amount in the 25-year history of this market. There's nearly $36 billion of ILS securities outstanding. So the market had a very healthy year. And, you know, frankly, one of the challenges was just getting all this work done to bring it to market, to bring all those deals to market. I'm really impressed, you know, looking back over the year, what the breadth of types of issuers, types of perils, and the breadth of geographies covered in the marketplace. It's really interesting. We had some new corporates come to market, like the publicly traded REIT Prologis, sponsoring a deal for the first time. Alphabet, you know, the largest technology company out there, coming to market for the third time. And Sempra Energy coming back to the market for wildfire risk exposure, and even the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power coming to market. So that's interesting. European risk was covered. Generali came forward with a Line 3 transaction that met certain ESG standards, which is something we can talk about. Covia came back to the market. And then Japanese sponsors like Tenkuri and Sampo and Tokyo Marine were back in the market. And then you had all these repeat sponsors, the USAAs of the world, the Allstates, some of the state residuals back in the market, CEA, FEMA was in the market again. And then it's interesting that the mortgage insurers have access this market for reinsurance capital. That's a slightly different market because the risks are different. It's not nat cat, but really interesting to see all the major mortgage insurers accessing the ILS market this year. And, you know, we're off to a great start, a really busy start in 2022. So it doesn't, the health of the market seems really strong. And whatever challenges there were, you know, seem to have been overcome.
Yeah, I tend to agree, Steve. I think the cat bond space in particular has demonstrated its resilience, and really investors are incredibly interested in the sector again now, which bodes well for all of these sponsors you've just mentioned. So maybe we could move on to you now, Ricky, and perhaps you could explain sort of a few of the trends, anything specific that you've noted in the catastrophe bond space and your work at Mayer Brown over recent months, and also what you expect to see for 2022.
Sure. As Steve said, last 2021 was the biggest year for issuances in the history of the market. And if you had asked me, at some point in the fall of last year, I would have said, okay, I think the market is probably going to take a break. There's going to be a breather as people assess what's occurred. Well, I was wrong. We are starting out 2022. I don't think we have ever been this busy in a January. I'm not sure we've ever been this busy at any given month of a year. It's repeat sponsors coming back, but then I think we're probably working with more first-time sponsors than we ever have at any given time. And again, I think it's just people are really looking at the space. Notwithstanding the number of events, the market has responded. Claims have been paid. All of the concerns that people had in the past about if an event were to occur, are you really going to get paid? Is the coverage real? It is. Companies got paid. The market functioned exactly like it was supposed to function. And so I think you have a lot of people now looking at the market and saying, okay, I want to get involved here. It's a lot of traditional insurance companies, but more and more non-traditional corporate companies like a Prologis or like a public utility kind of looking at, okay, how can we access market? Are there gaps in our coverage that we can look to the public markets for? But I think the other thing that's really interesting is we're seeing, obviously the cat bond market, the ILS market historically has really looked at property cat excess of loss named peril coverage. That's been the growth of the market. There's a lot of reasons about that around the modeling and things like that. But I think more and more people are looking at what happened, what the ILS market, the alternative capital markets have done for that market, and saying, how do we apply this? Obviously, the insurance industry is much broader. How do we apply this to other areas? And we're starting to have a number of conversations and in structuring deals right now. A lot of it is in the casualty space, so still property cat, but now casualty business with a lot more of a tail to it. And thinking, how can we take these structures, which have been historically used for property cat, and deal with maybe longer tail business? There's some complexity around that. You have, I think, an increasing number of funds. Some tech companies are also looking at this space and saying, there's a lot of innovation going here. How can we take what we have and apply that to this space? It's kind of, I think a lot of those companies see this as an area ripe for use of technology, root use of new ideas, obviously in the traditional concept of insurance. So I think we're going to see that growth. I think this has been talked about at every conference for at least 5, maybe even 10 years. But I think for the first time, we're actually now seeing, I actually think deals are going to start getting done now in those areas, which I think is exciting and will further lead to growth.
Yeah, no, that is exciting, especially when people start to actually put to use some of the technology that's been, yeah, as you say, it's been 5 or 10 years people have been talking about expanding the market and using technology to help them do that. But perhaps it's just now that we're getting to a stage where that's really tangibly possible. So it's great to hear you guys are really busy as well, because that always bodes well for everybody else in the marketplace. So. Moving over to Colin now, perhaps you could give us a bit of an overview of some of the trends you're seeing in the reinsurance sidecar space, and how do you envisage that market segment developing this year? It's perhaps not had as an easier run of it over the last 12 months or so.
Yeah, I think that's right. And just keying off some of the things that Steve and Ricky have said just now, the cat bond market just surpassed everyone's expectations during 2021, and going into 2022 is just all the signs of it going from strength to strength. And many commentators have sort of looked at the sidecar and collateralized remarket somewhat, I think, unfairly in an unfavorable way. By pure comparison with the more structured end of the market. I think that, the technology that Ricky refers to that's being put to work from the ILS market across, say, for example, the legacy arena. So last year I saw some important deals where legacy players are partnering on these kind of sidecar tools to give them extra firepower to do deals. You know, that's pretty new stuff, and maybe 2 or 3 years ago wasn't on anyone's, you know, particular radar. So the sidecar market is a much more flexible animal, if you like, to be able to cope with that kind of market development. So that's one thing I'd say. I think also with respect to the sidecar market, although there's been plenty of commentary around investors sort of pushing back, if you will, and I think part of that is a sort of cumulative losses from year on year, just slightly gum things up a little bit in terms of the availability of capacity. But also, I think you've got to pause and reflect upon, and this is why the cat bond market is slightly different. You know, most sidecars traditionally, if you go back a few years, were event-driven animals. So capacities required, sidecars were there to fill the gap. I think people got used to sidecars then developing their kind of own momentum and becoming regular renewals, regular events. And actually what happened was that the market was so almost responsive and successful that when it takes a little bit of a pause, people have kind of been surprised. Whereas if you take a longer term view and you look back on the development of the market, and whilst examples like the legacy partnerships of last year, you know, prove the resilience and the innovation, I think you have to take stock sometimes and remember that the whole sidecar market was to deliver where capacity was required, as opposed to this kind of continual, kind of perpetual renewals and new issuers coming to market.
That's actually a really good point. One of the things that we've seen through this recent renewal is that actually capacity is not in short supply in the majority of the marketplace. So you're right, sidecars have always been a more sort of speculative type vehicle that brings in capital when it's really needed. I guess where it's interesting is when they become longer term capital vehicles as well and actually start to fund growth for companies too. So moving back to you, Steve, I mean, just talked about sidecars and how they can fund growth perhaps more sort of permanently for insurers or reinsurers. But do you see sort of convergence continuing? Are you seeing ILS structures and sort of ILS related topics increasingly cropping up across Mayer Brown's broader insurance practice work?
Yeah, it's interesting, Steve. I think we have, and Colin alluded to these partnerships involving, you know, legacy books. Sidecars still are experiencing, the sidecar market, I think, experiencing issues around, you know, trapped capital and investors not knowing, you know, exactly when they're going to be able to get a release of their investment. I think some of these longer term structures that have been introduced in the past year are interesting because obviously institutional investors that are funding those new vehicles are taking a long view and are willing to be patient and allow the sponsor over time to deploy the capital in the right way and realize an interesting return. It's really more of like an equity partnership with the particular sponsor. That's a very interesting development, I think. There's obviously appetite on the institutional investor side for that type of investment. It is a partnership. I think those institutional investors are, you know, choosing their sponsor partners very carefully. But, you know, on the sponsor side, you're talking about attracting capital and allowing them to leverage their underwriting platform in a way that's not dilutive to their shareholder base. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a very interesting proposition. You know, not that it's a new concept, because companies like Everest Re had established Mount Logan Re, you know, years ago, and that has been a great success. But I think we're seeing new entrants in the past year and more people, you know, looking for those long-term type sidecars. I think it's interesting too, you know, we've had a number of M&A clients, certainly on the buy side, you know, looking at targets and working through you know, hurdle rates and what the investment opportunities are in making acquisitions. And certainly, they frequently talk about, well, we could take this platform and we could really enhance our return by creating sidecars on certain lines of business. That's a really interesting development. I think we will see more of that.
Yeah, it's sorry, go ahead.
No, just to add to what Steve was saying there, to finish off on the sort of sidecar market more generally, and this is obviously stating perhaps an obvious point, but the market's always talking about diversification benefits. And of course, for a lot of investors, as Steve's alluded to, this is the perfect diversification because, you know, we don't want to just be piling into NatCat catastrophe bonds. There's not just diversification of interest in new perils coming to market, but new structures and the ability in the sidecar world to really generate a partnership to be much more involved in the part of the business. The whole essence of a sidecar is to be almost closer to the peril than a cat bond. Much lower layers, different kind of structure, taking quota shares. That to me is much more of an involved process, if you will, than the sort of more structured higher layer stuff that you get. And it's not the case to say that one investor profile is good for one and one for the other. They actually want diversification, what we're saying, across all opportunities. So again, healthy for the market, I would say.
Yeah, and a good sign of investors increasing sophistication in the space. And I know there's been quite a lot of negative commentary about investors wanting to exit, but actually the ones I've spoken to over the last 6 months are largely just looking for the next way to access insurance linked returns rather than thinking that they just don't want to access it anymore. So I think that's positive for everybody. So
just quickly on the sidecar side, and it gets to the point you just made. I think you're seeing less investment in, I think, the traditional sidecars, which were the more marketed syndicated deals where you might have 5 to 6 investors in one sidecar. I think that market has likely declined. But what we've seen a real growth is the sort of bespoke, one-off negotiated, one investor, maybe it's at a segregated account company in Bermuda or something, but negotiating terms, you know, for itself, it is the sole investor in that particular segregated account. I think that market has actually grown. So I think maybe people are coming into the market in a different way than they did in the past. You know, the market is still evolving along that way.
My only fear for that market is that one day people will run out of names for these segregated sales. There are some very good
ones. You're going to continue start seeing, you know, 87B5 or something that sound like a bunch of robots or something, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I thought we'd move on and discuss some of the new domicile issues and the domiciles that are emerging and perhaps any other regulatory developments that you think are key at the moment. And Ricky, I want to stick with you. So I know you've got some good opinions on some of the newer domiciles in the space. And perhaps we could start with Hong Kong, which is really the newest out there.
Sure.
Now got a transaction under its belt. And I guess, are you expecting to see more? And do you feel that domestic Chinese issuers are really the most likely source of deal flow in that market?
Right. I do think Hong Kong, for a new ILS jurisdiction, is in a fairly unique position. It has a fairly obvious, I won't say quite captive, but a very obvious set of cedents, which are going to be domestic Chinese insurance companies that are likely to use the Hong Kong regime. So I think that actually situates Hong Kong quite well because the regime, the legislation isn't limited to those type of clients. Other cedents could absolutely use it. But I think there's a very obvious cedent base for coming through Hong Kong to do deals. And I think that's going to help them. I think they've done a deal. They've got that experience. That transaction, I believe, you know, was a private placement. I think there are several conversations going on right now about some potential more full-blown 144A offering cap bonds potentially out of Hong Kong. But I think there's a real opportunity for that to grow. And again, I think there's a sort of an obvious source of business for that legislation. So I think there's real opportunity and that probably will grow over the next few years.
Good. Yeah, no, that's positive to hear. And then maybe Singapore as well, Ricky. I mean, they've obviously built quite good traction now and been quite active again in 2021. But do you think this is going to prove a little more challenging once the grant program comes to an end, or do you think we're in a stage now where we're going to see some benefits in terms of grants more permanently, perhaps?
I would say it's still to be determined. Singapore has been very successful in attracting deals. We're working on several transactions now, so all that's continuing into 2022. I'd say the process has become more streamlined and quicker than it was whenever this started 3 or 4 years ago. You know, that said, it is still longer and more involved than going through a process in Bermuda. So I think steps have been made, but that processes, I think, need to continue evolving in Singapore as they have been. I don't know that they ever need to necessarily become on par with the time frames in Bermuda, but the process probably still needs to get a little bit simpler and quicker in order to kind of maintain that momentum. And I think it's to be determined, you know, how that continues to evolve.
And the grant
The
program, I
grant,
mean,
yeah.
the grant program, you know, has been the big attraction in Singapore,
Correct.
even for certain non-US sponsors, sorry, US sponsors going there to
Right.
take advantage of that. But there are limitations to that grant program that, you know, may impose kind of a limitation on the continued growth of that market.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's all a bit uncertain how things play out further into the future. And as you said, Ricky, and yeah, speed to market's really key. And this is something I wanted to raise with you, Colin. Obviously, you're based in the UK, and the UK continues to show great potential as a future home for ILS. And we've finally seen some Lloyd's-related ILS activity through London Bridge Risk in recent months. But still, speed, regulatory friction seem to be holding that back. And now we've got a review of regulation underway in the House of Lords for the London market. And yesterday, insurance and securities was raised as a example of where regulation is perhaps failing the market in its ambitions. But do you think those sorts of reviews are going to actually address the pinch points of the ILS approval process in the UK? Or do we need to sort of go back to the drawing board and have a more wholesale rethink of the framework?
Look, to add to what Ricky said, I think that, you know, adding potential jurisdictions to the stable that's available for our market is always a good thing. And, you know, we are like you, jurisdictionally agnostic, and some business is source led, so where the cedent is based, it just makes sense to have another option, and the UK falls into that bucket. I would say two things though. There's certainly a speed to market and a process element, and that's been talked about for some time with respect to the UK. And to echo what Ricky said, I don't think anyone would expect the kind of turnaround time frames that you see in the most developed market, which is Bermuda. But I think that the gap still has to be narrowed. I think that that's been, you know, part of people's attention, both at the regulators in the UK and politicians, and you know the London Market Group, the LMG, raised it as well. I think that that's been taken on board, to be honest with you, based on our experience. I think that there is an acknowledgement that the processes have to become more streamlined whilst respecting, you know, their approach to regulating these vehicles and the wider market. I think the more interesting aspect of what's coming down the track, and maybe the House of Lords inquiry will prompt this. So, in addition to just timing and process, I think there's still some substantive, you know, sort of kind of headwinds in the way that, let's say, for example, Solvency II framework did not allow for much flexibility. And I think that the more interesting aspect, in addition to the timing, is can, in a post-Brexit world, can the UK regulators be persuaded to somehow step outside of what, to my mind, has always been a bit of a straitjacket in terms of referencing back to Solvency II regulations? Because really, they're not Solvency II animals. They're kind of being forced into being Solvency II animals. So that to me is a more interesting aspect of the development of the UK as an alternative market. As you said, that there are clear advantages to certain cedants, and the same would be true for Hong Kong, as Ricky said, and Singapore and other jurisdictions. That's all good news for the market. I think sometimes this is too much noise around being competitive as opposed to being collaborative and just being generally good for the market. But you know, any raising of these issues and a willingness to at least explore them is a good thing. And I think you've also reported, Steve, on little things like tweaks to the tax, you know, legislation in the UK around risk transformers vehicles, you know, to basically clarify a glitch, if you like, that these are good things. That's progress in my view.
Yeah. No, there has definitely been progress. And over the last year, I think that the discussion around it has perhaps got a little more constructive as well, which is positive for moving forward. So, okay. So to close, perhaps for our listeners' benefits, I'm going to ask each of you for one thought on a key issue that you come across in your daily practice work at Mayor Brown that you feel the ILS market could address or perhaps requires work, or just something that perhaps people aren't thinking about as much as you believe they should do. So, Steve, is there any particular issue that stands out for you?
Oh, boy. One area that is interesting to me is this whole ESG movement. And that's a broader global economic movement for sure. And I think it's really taken hold in Europe, and I think it's starting to have great influence in the US. And that's across the capital markets. There's ESG scoring going on and so forth for every company that's out there raising capital. It'll be interesting to see if the ILS market can adapt and really take advantage of that trend. It might be in some cases a kind of forced trying to fit a square peg into a round hole a bit, trying to apply those ESG standards to NatCat bonds or even other types of sidecar structures or other types of ILS. But it's interesting. And Generali had an effort in this past year with its Lion 3 transaction. That's an interesting development. It would be interesting to see where that goes. I don't see that as a problem for the market. It's not an issue that is going to in any way otherwise impede the market, but may present some interesting opportunities to expand the market.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think it's definitely an area that's going to help to expand the market in time. But it also does present its own challenges in terms of how the industry meets stricter ESG guidelines that some of the large allocators would want to see, because that's quite challenging today still, I think. So moving over to you, Ricky, is there anything from your perspective that our listeners should really be thinking about?
You know, I think it really gets to the area of innovation. As we mentioned earlier, you're starting to see more and more non-traditional insurance companies and otherwise start to get involved in this market. Obviously, it's a heavily regulated industry, so you always have to be very conscious of the regulations, which are restrictive by design. And so there are certain things that maybe companies want to do that they can't because of existing legislation. But, you know, at times, I think the industry has been doing things a particular way for a very long time. And so when someone comes in with these new ideas, it can sometimes be difficult for them to try to interact with the systems that are currently in place because they just assume a certain model of doing business that, you know, some people are kind of starting to question, well, is there a different way to do this, maybe for a particular line, for a different segment of the market? And I think that can be challenging at times because, again, there's this real commitment to doing it a certain way. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how that evolves.
Yeah, no, that's another really good point, actually, and particularly about the onboarding of new people to the industry in terms of sponsors and investors as well. There's certainly a lot more the industry can do to make that an easier process for people. So finally, Colin, anything from your perspective that our listeners should be thinking about?
Well, I think just to give you an example of something that both Steve and Ricky were just referring to there, if you look at the Danish Red Cross volcano bond last year, although it was a small size, you know, that was a real kind of step forward. It was ESG. It ticked so many boxes. It used different technology for settlement. You know, just terrific. And huge amounts of credit go to the team there and some of the other advisors. We were fortunate to also be involved. That sort of collective pooling of experience and knowledge about how to put something to work in a different context. And you've only got to sort of, you know, pick up the newspapers in the last week or so and think about the devastating impact of the Tongan earthquake and the resulting tsunami and all the potential for a repeat and an upsize of that kind of bond offering to really get the market excited and to quench the appetite of investors' ESG requirements and everything else in between. You know, that's just a terrific example of the future direction. It's not going to hold the market on its own, but it's certainly, you know, another great, you know, piece of evidence showing the maturity of the market and its ability to respond to the problems of the here and now.
Absolutely, yeah, and solving a real need there too, and helping to close the much discussed protection gap all at the same time. Well, look, thank you very much, gentlemen. I really appreciate your time. It's great to have you involved in this video and great to have your support for the conference. And I look forward to seeing you all in person in April. Anybody watching or listening, you will be able to still buy tickets for the conference. They will run out at some point before the event itself. So do visit the Artemis website and secure your place today. So thank you again, Steve, Ricky, Colin. Really appreciate your time today.
Sure. Thank you, Steve. Take care.
Thank you. Steve.